Welcome to Haunt Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you.
Yes.
And you've caught us at a bit of an awkward time, dear listener.
Yes, it's like really close to opening, and we're kind of stressed out trying to get really, really close to it. I even lost my Duolingo streak.
I know, that is like the biggest tragedy of haunt season right now.
I know.
You lost your, what was it, 68 day?
Yes.
Duolingo streak. And here's the thing, Duolingo offered her a chance to buy it.
Yeah. Back,
but she's like, no, I'm too ethical for that.
Well, no. Maybe. It felt like cheating, and I figured I could just start another streak after haunt season was over.
She's too honest for her own good sometimes.
That's probably more accurate.
It's probably very accurate.
I do tend to be very honest.
But yes, dear listener, we will be completely honest with you. We are a little bit crazy. Our opening night is coming up soon.
And even though many of you have already had many opening nights. Your opening night and many weekends.
But us as just mere avid home haunters and avid haunt attendees, our actual opening night comes up on Friday. So this is really the crunch time. And interestingly, I expect to be much more calm for the next episode, even though it will be going live Halloween Day.
Yes.
Because by then we'll A, have had opening night. Second night, and we'll be having an actual honest-to-God day off where we can record it. So, yes, this is the most stressy and panicky of the Haunt Weeklies, I think and I hope.
Yeah, because we've tried opening on a Sunday before, but nobody can compete with the Saints in this city.
Not in this city, no. Well, that and frankly, just no one thinks to go to haunts on Sundays in this area.
Maybe not in this area.
Exclusively this area. Like, we just went to a haunt tonight on a Sunday.
Right.
And there were not very many people.
Yeah. It was
busier than I expected, but not busy.
Yeah.
There was no line. We went straight in, pretty much.
Right.
But yes, normally with these, we have lots of time to prepare, do carefully crafted artisanal show notes, if you will.
Ha ha.
Ha ha.
That's foreshadowing.
Ooh.
Although the title might have done that, too.
Yeah, it's true. Your iTunes probably gave away the theme of the episode already. But yes, regardless, carefully crafted show notes, and we sit down, we have these long conversations. This is more of a screw it, type it out, and wing it type deal for us. So I apologize if we seem a little less put together than usual. Not that you'll ever be able to tell. This is us we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, just saying. Nonetheless, if that is the case, I do apologize. But yes, we are discussing artisanal haunted houses.
Yes.
Or as you like to call it, artist anal.
I did not call it that. I read it that way.
That is the spelling, I admit. And thanks to that, I will never misspell it again typing these show notes. I got like all the red squigglies.
Yeah.
And that one will never happen again.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for the SNL Jeopardy for teaching me how to break up words.
Yeah, Celebrity Jeopardy and SNL, Sean Connery teaching us how this game is played properly.
Yeah.
But yes. But first thing is first, we do have conference reminders as usual.
Yes.
So, rock, paper, scissors to see who goes first, or would you like me just to start this show?
I can start it.
Well, if you need a break after haunt season is done, and I suspect you will, head on over to the Legendary Haunt Tour. It's at the Pittsburgh, at the Fallmart Pittsburgh. It's hosted by the same people that do Tron's World. They'll be visiting the Scare House and the 100 Acres Manor. You can learn more at legendaryhaunttour.com. Two T's there. Don't screw that up.
I love how that since you were dealing with the Vlad post earlier, that you got a little bit of the fake vampire accent when you said Trans World.
Trans World!
Exactly. That was kind of funny. Okay, next in January 14th through 17th, we have Halloween and Party Expo here in New Orleans. If you're coming to town for that, let us know. We'd love to grab a drink or something with you. It's 300.
What, a drink in New Orleans? No.
Never.
350
vendors requires business verification. HalloweenPartyExpo.com for more information.
And also to do the whole application thingy that you will have to do to get in. It's pretty damn trivial if we're going to be straight.
Yeah, if just... go online, fill it out.
If you've got your business business number, you're fine. After that, in January 17th through 20th, all the way in Hawaii, there's Corn Party. I'm really confused by this one.
Yeah.
But it's for operators of corn mazes, and you can learn more at The Maze, that's T-H-E-M-A-I-Z-E, like corn maze, .com, themaze.com.
And then January 26th through 30th, it's HauntCon at the Sheraton Nashville Airport, Nashville, Tennessee. Tours of Haunted Hell Nashville, Nashville Nightmare, and Slaughterhouse. HauntCon.com for more information.
Early bird specials on this one do run out, so get there quickly. They're not like Transworld, who we're discussing in a minute, that will just do the early bird right up until like 5 minutes before opening.
Yes.
On that note, Transworld is March 23rd through 26th, 2017, as usual in St. Louis, Missouri. They're at the America Center. Early bird discounts do you $50 off, but there's no necessary rush. You get those through March. Take your time. And you can learn more at HaShow.com. That's HaShow.com.
And then finally, for these, June 8th through 11th, we have the Midwest Haunters Convention, Columbus, Ohio, the Greater Columbus Center. Haunt tours are still TBA, but it's only, you know,
it's October,
and this is in June, so, you know. MidwestHauntersConvention.com to find more information.
Yes, check all of those great conferences out. And, like I said, if you're coming to the Halloween and Party Expo in January, definitely let us know. We'd love to meet up. I don't think we're going to that event.
Yeah, it's not, I don't know.
I don't know. We'll have to see.
Also, if you hear of other conventions or events in your area and want to get them on the podcast, just send them to us and let us know about them.
Yes, we are on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. We are on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. Send us a message. Leave us a comment. Just, you know, pretty much get our attention any way you can. It's not that difficult. We are very, very, very easy to distract.
Mm-hmm.
Squirrel!
Yes.
Okay, so this Haunt Weekly is inspired by a trend we've noticed locally, even though it's been ongoing elsewhere in the country for much longer.
Right.
In fact, our friend Kyle, when he was on in the previous episodes, and I forgot to look up which ones he was on, like I said, this is not a well-put-together episode.
Yeah.
He described how he worked at one of these haunts, the Haunted Soap Factory.
Right.
But we're terming it, and I don't know if this is an official term, it's our term, an artisanal haunt.
Yeah.
Why? Because I just wanted to sound more hipster today.
Well, it kind of fits the theme of the haunt.
It does, actually.
At least the one we went to tonight.
It fits all the ones we've gone to this season.
Yeah.
But yes, artisanal haunts. Now, what the hell is an artisanal haunt, I hear you ask? That is a valid question.
Mm-hmm.
My definition, my working definition, subject to modification and changes moving forward as new evidence comes to light, is at first, it tends to be a smaller haunt.
Right.
We're talking typically only a couple thousand square feet on the high end, usually.
Yeah, that's the very high end.
Yeah, these typically are much smaller spaces, usually sub 1,000 square feet in many cases.
Yeah, I think the three we've been to have been that.
I think the one we were at was multi-thousand square feet. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it was. But it's usually put on by non-haunters. That's one of the big deals to me here.
Right.
Is we talk about our haunt community. These are people who are not necessarily in it.
Yeah.
They are from other communities who are wanting to run haunted attractions.
Yeah. They're sometimes haunt adjacent.
No, like, really, they're usually haunt adjacent. They usually helps if they're haunt adjacent.
Yes. Well, theater groups, performers, artists, those types
creative types of other stripes, to be clear. These are definitely creatives and creators.
Yes.
But they are trying their hand at a haunted attraction.
Right. And so when you go through these, you'll see, especially with the ones put on by theater groups, you'll see things like really nice costumes, the makeup, the delivery of the dialogue, all of that's going to be great. But sometimes they do not have a fundamental understanding of the basics of haunting.
Yes. There's definitely this really strong focus on creativity and uniqueness and showcasing the sort of the native craft, if you will.
Yeah. And I can say that all of them that we've been to have been very interesting.
Yes.
And thought-provoking.
I will say this. None that we've been to were boring in any way, shape, or form.
Correct.
I may have other issues and I have other compliments.
Yes.
But boring is not an adjective.
Yes.
I may be tired.
Yes.
It's not an adjective that will be used over the course of this conversation.
Right.
The main thing is they have lower costs and limited runs. In fact, one of them we went to this year was only open for 6 hours.
I thought it was four.
Was it four?
Yeah, 4 to 8.
Okay, it was 4 hours. That was it.
Yep.
4 hours. One and done.
Yep.
You didn't go in those 4 hours? Tough luck. I'm flipping off a microphone for some reason.
I know.
I have no idea what the listener's supposed to obtain from
How much rum is in your drink?
Not enough. And I think the exhaustion is doing more harm than the rum at this juncture.
Yeah.
But yeah, the lower cost, limited runs. They tip. In fact, all of the ones we went to only started the last 2 weekends of October.
Yes.
At the earliest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, we think like the haunted, like the bigger haunts, they typically open either the first weekend of October or even middle of September.
Right.
These guys typically target the last few weeks. They really have a very tight time frame that they work within.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, in their own ways, try to push the boundary on what is and is not a haunted attraction.
Right. And it makes you think about, you know, is this a haunt? Is this not a haunt? It's like the...
Is this a letter?
Yes. The They Might Be Giant song. Thank you, Ellie.
Is this a letter? No, that's not a letter. I don't know what that is. That's not a letter.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't watch that. Don't listen to that song without the music video. It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Or do, and, you know, be confused.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows? But yes, they're all about pushing boundaries on what is and is not a haunted attraction. And I think that's pretty interesting, because I'm a very big advocate of the idea of haunted attractions being an art form.
Yes, they are.
I believe they are. I believe they can be. I believe they should be thought of one. And they don't get a lot of credit for being an art form, unfortunately.
No, they don't. I mean, I see it very much as my artistic endeavor.
Yes.
Because
it's an artistic endeavor that we enter into together.
Right.
Because I write the story, you paint the sets and do the overall design of the rooms,
mm-hmm.
and we both contribute to the carpentry in the building.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, you look at our resumes, neither of us have jack squat that says carpenter.
No, but I did grow up in a crafter's house.
Yeah.
So I've been using tools since I was little
bitty.
But
I'm just saying, you know, employment and education-wise, neither of us have done anything that screams carpenter.
Okay.
And so it's a chance for us to let that creative side out.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons why we do look at it.
Right.
That way. So why are artisanal haunts... I'm sorry, what were you about to say?
I was just going to say, well, the other thing is, I've always viewed art as something that gets an emotional response from a person.
Okay.
From the viewer.
All right.
And if I can do that in a haunt, then it is art to me.
That is quite fair. And I do think we do that in our haunt. And I do think haunts in general do that.
Yeah.
Though usually the emotional response is fear.
Yes.
And that is something the artisanal haunts don't always abide by, as we'll go into.
Yeah.
They don't always target that fear reaction.
Right. And sometimes it may just be that they don't know how to. Like the one we went tonight, I think that maybe they just miss some opportunities.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk specifically about these haunts in a minute.
Yeah.
And name some names and talk some talk. So we'll get down to that. But so why are these taking off? Why are these becoming more and more popular? Why are they spreading to, like, in Southeast Louisiana area, for example, this region is so dominated by a handful of very large haunts.
I mean, right.
We can rabbit them off right now. 13th Gate, House of Shock, Mortuary, Rise. These are the big guns. These are huge haunts in this area.
Right.
That has not made a lot of room for the smaller haunts.
Right.
Even haunts like Chamber of Horrors, which try to be those smaller, more niche haunts, have struggled.
Yes.
So, why are they taking off? Why are they doing this? Well, first is, they have lower startup costs.
They do.
The dirty secret to pretty much all the ones I can think of is they already had the space.
Yeah, they already had the space. They already had a lot of the props and things.
Yep.
And the costumes.
Yep.
And the makeup person to do the makeup.
Yep.
So, all of that startup is taking care of.
Yeah, they had the space, and they had the talent, and they had at least a decent amount of the things.
Right, they already had the volunteers invested and the charity they were gaining money for.
Yeah, so basically they had all the pieces in place. All they had to do was come up with an idea and find a way to throw the doors open.
Right.
And that is super low risk. That low risk of failure is very flipping enviable to a lot of haunt owners.
Yeah.
Because if you're like a lot of haunt owners who have invested life savings, have gotten bank loans, have scraped together, you know, partners and investors to just throw the doors open for the first time and try to turn a profit, this idea of almost zero risk haunting is both appealing and frustrating in the same breath, I think.
Yeah.
I can understand both reactions, but that's really true here, is that they are not taking a super... They're taking a risk, don't get me wrong, but it's not a super large one.
Yeah.
This is, in many ways, as we'll discuss, a secondary business to them.
Right, and the other thing is a lot of them are non-profits already.
Yes.
Like, theater groups and things are going to be non-profits. And so they have that on their side because they can ask for donations and it'll be tax write-offs.
If these haunts fail, no person is going to declare bankruptcy, probably.
Right.
In fact, no organization will probably declare bankruptcy.
Right.
It's just an idea that didn't work, move on to the next one.
Yeah,
that's the worst case scenario.
It's a fundraiser.
It's a fundraiser, yes. And that's the thing. This is very, very heavily a promotion thing for a lot of these groups. This is a chance to promote their event, their space, whatever it is they do.
Right.
Whether they're teaching classes in something, whether they're offering an artistic space, whether they're a theater group trying to do something year-round, whether it's an art gallery that's trying to get people to come in after season to look at various performance art or whatever.
Right.
It is a chance to get the public in there to do something that the public is familiar with and promote their space and promote whatever it is they're doing.
Right.
And that's, I think, one of the beautiful things about it.
Yeah.
It really is a showcase of talent in that regard.
It is.
I mean, and that's one of the things, we talk about how haunts, like you and I know this, and other haunters know this, running a haunted attraction pulls from so many different talents.
Yes.
You need acting, you need building, you need painting, you need promotion, you know what I mean?
Right.
We can ramble off a list of skills you need, and this is a chance to showcase those talents.
Right. And the other thing that they have built in already is an art at our customers and followers of their events.
Absolutely.
It's already a built-in reach.
Yeah. If you're trying to start a new haunt from scratch, you don't have those Facebook followers. You don't have that mailing list. You don't have those connections with your audience.
Right, because from scratch kind of means you don't have any of that.
Well, fine, make it sound patently obvious. But yeah, the point is, these guys can start a haunt and tap into the resources they already have.
Right,
which are many, in many of these, at least in most of these cases I've seen.
Yeah.
And in that regard, it's a chance to earn extra revenue from those people.
Yes. Exactly.
It really is extra revenue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's kind of the thing is, in nearly all the cases that I've seen and all the ones I've heard about, the haunt is kind of a secondary revenue.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I mean, we're talking about artist spaces and theater groups and things like that, where they have a primary function, a primary business, and they're using the haunt as a means of filling a dead part of the season, a chance to promote themselves.
Right.
Basically a chance to do something new and exciting that, like I said, carries very little risk, but may bring in extra revenue, maybe a secondary income that may be able to boost them.
Right.
So, and that, like I said, to a lot of, to the bigger haunts, that's pretty strange. It's like, to, if you're a haunted attraction, being a haunted attraction is your primary income.
Yes.
To think of it as just, oh yeah, this is something supplemental.
Right.
You can see why that's a shift in thought.
It is a shift in thought. I do wonder still about the escape rooms if we're going more in that direction, though.
You know, I'm really
torn. Or if it's just a fad.
You know, I'm really torn on that because, and yeah. this is admittedly an aside.
Yeah, because we'll have that episode later.
I'm sure we will. But with escape rooms, I like fluctuate between thinking that this is the direction haunts are going. They're going to primarily be escape rooms that offer a haunt in 1.5 months out of the year, to thinking, like you just said, that these escape rooms are going to eventually fizzle out and die, and if you don't have a banging haunt, it's over. You don't have a business.
Right.
So, I don't know. I go between those two as well. I don't know if that'll be the primary business. Right now, escape rooms are the secondary business.
Yes.
So, we will see what happens with that.
Yep.
Now, for artisanal haunts, there are indeed many advantages. And the biggest that I see is the freedom to take greater risks.
Yeah. Because, I mean, a lot of them, like I said, don't have the fundamentals of haunting.
Yeah.
And they've got great ideas and great creativity in what they want to do and vision.
Yeah.
But it's not what you would consider a traditional haunt.
No. A traditional haunt is centered around what earns a living from a haunted attraction.
Right.
How do you get enough customers through the door and through the haunt to open up next season?
Right.
You remove that pressure necessarily to always have enough customers open up next year. You have that other source of income.
Right.
You have that other purpose. You lower that financial risk. They have freedom to do things that a larger, a pure haunted attraction might look and go, well, we can't do that because that might kill our throughput.
Right. That might kill the throughput. It may turn away customers.
It may give us too small of an audience.
Yeah. People may not like it and may not come back the next year.
People may give us a bad review on Facebook and Yelp. But those things are real. Those are real concerns haunted attractions have that these artisanal haunts don't necessarily have to contend with.
Right.
They can take the gambles, and if they lose, oh well, move on. Like I said, this is just a secondary business. They can try a haunted attraction next year or not.
Right.
It's totally within their power to make that decision. And that really does allow them to create something truly new and experimental.
Yes.
You know, they're not bound by the rules of your haunt, man.
Yeah.
They don't have to be like you, Daddy-O. They can do their own thing and be their own person. Oh, God. I've depressed Crystal so hopelessly now. You can't see her face, but it is the epitome of sadness and frustration.
Yes.
I apologize, dear listener.
Yes. That's
the point remains, it's like I said, commercial haunts, pure haunted attractions, have to do what makes them commercially viable, whatever that is in your region, in your haunt.
Right.
Whatever it is that makes you commercially viable, you have to do. These haunts are not bound by that. And so with those fewer worries, they can take greater risks. They can cater to, and here's the thing, they can cater to different audiences.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, a haunted attraction is a mass media business in its own way.
Yes.
It's all about pure numbers. How many people can you put through? How many people can you get in line? How quickly can you put them through? And how many they're coming back next year?
Right. And with these, it's more about giving the customers a unique experience that they're not going to get anywhere else.
Right.
Not saying that traditional haunts don't do that, but this is, They're very hard to describe.
Yes. Well, I mean, here's the thing.
Because they're so varied.
Yeah, and indeed. And that's kind of the thing. Is like a haunted attraction typically has a core audience.
Right.
We can ramble off the I guess you would say the metrics of what that core audience usually is. They usually skew younger. They usually skew white, male, college-aged, high school-aged.
Yeah.
And they typically are in a middle-class income bracket. You know, you can think of the typical haunt audience.
Yeah.
They can say, you know what, we want to cater to a completely different audience.
Right. We want to cater to the people who go to independent theater and, you know, things like that versus people who just love Halloween and haunted houses.
Maybe we want to target a slightly older audience. Maybe we want to go more adult.
Right.
Maybe we want to go to a slightly, you know, downscale audience, maybe a slower, lower income audience. Maybe, you know what I mean? They have that freedom to say we want to target different people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, haunted attractions know, you can stand any night and you look at your line, see who is your audience, who is going through. You can tell the age, you can tell where they came from, you can tell who they are pretty easily.
Right.
And these artisanal haunts can say, we're doing something totally different.
Yeah, they can.
And that's really, really interesting. And A, that can expose more people to haunted attractions.
Right. But you know, we do know that at least one of the ones we went to, they didn't have a lot of people with haunting experience at all.
No, they did not.
And I don't know if they've ever been to haunted houses or looked at them after going through it.
Yeah, and that is one of the things. There's definitely a disconnect between what is a haunted attraction, like a mainstream haunted attraction, and what is a haunted attraction at these artisanal style haunts.
Right.
Because you sometimes get the impression that someone told them what a haunted attraction was like, and they tried to emulate it from that.
Right.
And so you get very different experiences. But like I said, this can expose people to haunts that might not have been interested otherwise.
Yes.
And it can bring people to haunts who might not have gone otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It has the potential to really expand the audience, because here's the thing, as an industry, we do tend to be kind of an echo chamber.
Right,
we do. We know what audience butters our bread.
Yeah.
So we cater to that audience.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we could reach a broader audience and get even more people to go to haunts?
Right.
Well, that's possible, but we have to find a ways to reach them. And these artisanal haunts are the ones finding the way to do it. So, yeah, they have some pretty strong advantages. But I've also got some pretty strong concerns.
Yeah. Oh, they also do tend to be cheaper, too.
Oh, yes, cheaper. I think the most we paid for any of the ones we went to this season was $15.
Yeah, we've been to three.
Yeah, we've been to three. And I think, let's see, Lafitte was 10, but that's a charity/volunteer haunt.
No, that I don't think. Okay, for it to be an artisanal haunt,
yeah,
I think you have to have artists.
Uh-huh. Well, and no, I was saying like, Lafitte was more of a traditional haunted attraction, but more from a previous era.
Right, yes.
It's not what I would consider a modern artisanal haunt.
No.
But of the mainstream haunts, I don't think we paid less than 20 a ticket.
No.
I think Mortuary paid 20 a ticket, but that was only through the grace of going on opening night and finding deals online and really working. Normally, it's $30 a ticket there.
Possibly Rise.
Rise was,
if you just did the haunt, not the zombie paintball.
I think Rise is $25 on its own. I'm going to look that one up.
Okay.
While we sit here and talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, it is more expensive. A lot of the smaller ones are $10 a piece instead of, you know, 20 plus.
And as you said, you know, like this, the highest has been 15, and that is pretty much a great, great deal. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, and Rise is $20 a ticket.
Okay.
So there you go. For just the haunt by itself.
Yep.
But yeah, concerns about these haunts, the worries. The biggest one for me, going through all three of the ones we've gone through, I look around and see safety and fire code issues everywhere.
Yeah. I'm, oh my gosh. Yeah. The one tonight was the worst.
I think all three of... Well, okay. We'll talk about these each individually in a minute.
Yeah.
But...
Okay, so here are the things that pro haunters or avid home haunters know.
Avid home haunters who still work hard to follow fire code compliance.
Right. No plastic sheeting for walls or ceilings. Because if it catches on fire, then you've got melting on fire plastic falling on your customers. Not a good combo.
No.
Narrow walkways. Uneven ground.
Lack of obvious exits and egress.
Yes. Ramps not designed well. I am fairly certain that there's not a way in some of these haunts to get out of the building quickly, like an egress corridor, you were just talking about. Anything else?
The lack of emergency lighting. Confusing lights and sound effects that cannot be quickly shut off.
Yeah.
The list, the beat goes on.
Yeah.
Basically, these have had nearly every fire code issue I can think of.
Right.
And these haunts just simply do not get inspected.
Yeah.
I mean, we can sit here and debate whether or not that's legal and all that, but the truth of the matter is they are open, they are taking customers,
right?
And they are super rarely inspected. And we heard the story at HauntCon, and this is not an artisanal haunt, but of the volunteer fire department haunt.
Right.
That had been open how many years? I'm trying to remember.
I don't
remember. It had been open for multiple seasons.
Yeah, I want to say something like between 10 and 14. It had been open a lot.
And they finally got a fire marshal inspection.
After a customer complained about feeling unsafe.
Yeah. They finally got a fire marshal inspection, and it went beyond disastrously.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned it before. They hit, 35 or 40 violations.
Like, high score violation territory.
Yeah, that's not a game you want to win.
No. Like I said, all three of the ones we've been to this year had some kind of fire code or safety issue.
Yeah.
And some are more severe than others, don't get me wrong. But these issues can affect all haunted attractions. Like, one of the reasons we take it seriously as home haunters...
Yeah.
Is even though we have zero obligation, we can literally do whatever the hell we want.
Well, that's the... Okay, so that's the attitude a lot of people take.
Yes.
But I don't know that that's accurate. Check your local laws.
But since we don't run a business,
right,
we don't have to worry about the fire marshal showing up.
In this area.
In our area, at least. So we can do whatever we want. But we actually take the fire code very, very seriously.
Right.
We have our corridors. We have our fire suppression systems. We have
cut-throughs to get quickly out of the haunt from either side.
We have fire code compliant material, fire retardant spray.
Yeah.
We take solid walls everywhere.
Yeah.
We even make sure to get the fire retardant ceiling tiles.
Yeah, there's no hanging plastic above customers. There's no fabrics above customers. Or like weed blocker above customers. There are like curtains, but they're treated.
And they're treated, and we basically...
And we've got a burn book. We've tested them.
Yeah, we've actually got a burn book. We take this stuff seriously because we know that if someone gets hurt in our haunt, not only does it still possibly impact us,
right,
but it could impact the entire industry.
Yeah.
Unsafe haunts. When people hear news stories about people getting hurt in haunted attractions due to carelessness by haunt owners,
right,
that impacts the entire industry.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we're all lumped in this together, man.
Yeah.
Whether we deserve to be or not, we do get lumped together.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of that is if someone does get hurt, it impacts everyone. Because A, what's going to happen? Fire marshal, fire code, we're going to see new rules, new regulations we have to follow.
Right.
That means time and money, but more importantly, means bad publicity. So, yes. And also, these attractions sometimes create confusion about what is and is not a haunted attraction.
Yeah.
At least one out of the three we've been to, we're really wrestling whether or not to call it a haunted attraction.
Yeah.
Two out of the three, I think, we can actually have an honest debate about.
Yeah. The third one, I think, is more performance art.
Yeah.
Just with a creepy vibe, I guess.
Yeah. And, well, let's actually talk about them, okay? We keep teasing how we're going to talk about these individual experiences. Yeah. We're a little bit over 30 minutes in. I think now's a good time to do the talk.
Yeah.
So we visited three of these types of spaces. The first one we went to was the one that was only open for 4 hours.
Right.
And it was the Fly Circus Space Presents Spooky Circus Haunted House.
Yes.
That is the full title.
Yes.
Long story short, Fly Circus Space is a space where you can go take classes for circus craft.
Yes, trapeze, silks,
tumbling, juggling,
yeah,
any of that stuff.
Contortionist stuff.
Exactly. You want to learn that stuff? Fly Circus Space is the place to go, or a place to go, at least.
Right.
This is a very, very small space, therefore is a very, very small haunt, or it was.
Yes.
Shouldn't say is, it's not anymore this season already.
Mm-hmm.
They're only open for one evening, and mostly it was about showing off the circus performers and what you can learn.
Right.
They had a silk performer, they had a contortionist, they had a trapeze artist,
right.
They had a juggler.
Yeah.
They had, like, one person from each of the crafts they teach. I suspect the instructors, honestly.
Yeah, probably.
I would be surprised if that was not the case.
I don't know how many instructors they have per craft.
I don't know either.
So I'm not sure on that one. But they were all in costume, and they were interesting to watch. It was, you go to a different area, and you stop, and you watch, and the tumbler would, you know, try to scare you.
Do some jump scares around corners. And it was actually kind of fascinating because it took the small space. It could not have been more than like 500 square feet. That's a high-end estimate.
Yeah, that's very high-end.
I'm being generous here. But they took the space and they divided it up using what they had on hand.
Right.
Mats and tapestries and whatever.
Yeah. Most of the walls were the thick landing mats.
Yeah, exactly.
The tumbling mats.
And so, and they made duct tape tombstones, which I thought was actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty clever.
Yeah, and actually didn't look, you would think by me saying duct tape tombstones, oh, that had to look like garbage. No, actually in low light it kind of worked.
Yeah.
It worked better than you would expect at the very least.
Yeah, and you didn't see it for very long. And it was a cereal box wrapped with duct tape, but, and written on with a Sharpie, but, you know, it worked.
And it fit with the theme, you know, with the theme.
We went in with very low expectations. They exceeded the low expectations.
It was very pretty. It was very interesting.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a soft pitch for the space and to take classes there.
Yeah.
I didn't feel pressured by any stretch.
No, and I think the only reason it was a soft pitch even for us was because someone asked about the space.
Yeah.
Someone in our group asked about the space, and so then they told them what you could learn there.
Yeah, and I'll say this. It was still interesting and fun for me.
Yeah.
It really was. And when we talk about the fire code issues, this one had the fewest.
Right. Because if there was a fire, you could just knock down a wall and run out.
It was that way. I mean, it was really, overall, probably, it was very, very interesting. Overall, I think it was the safest space.
Yeah.
And, frankly, it was still interesting and fun. I don't know if I would call it a haunted attraction.
Yeah.
More than maybe a Halloween-themed exhibition of their space.
Yeah, I think that's probably more accurate. It was an all-ages event.
Yes.
Even little kids could go to this.
Yeah.
And I knew that we had to have some kind of space where you could learn this stuff in New Orleans because I'm seeing it more often.
Yeah.
But I had no idea where it was or what it was called, so now I know.
Yeah, and this apparently is just one of several spaces, but this is the one we know now.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty interesting way of getting their name out there. I don't know if they made any money off of it or anything, but
yeah,
it certainly boosted their recognition, at least in our house.
Yeah, I would love to get some trapeze artist or silks performer stuff in a haunted house.
And that's kind of the thing. Like, one of the haunts we went to, this one of the mainstream haunts we went to, Terror on the Coast, had these types of performers at a stage show.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would like to see them inside the haunt as part of the haunt. Like, because you know, soak workers aren't going to be afraid of heights, so they could go up really high, be out of sight of the customer, and then drop down right in front of them.
Yeah. And they did kind of do that a little bit in this haunt.
Yeah, well, they started on the ground, then climbed up, and then slid down towards you, so.
Yeah, and it was, like I said, I found it interesting and fun. I stretched to call it a haunted attraction.
Yeah.
But still, it was fascinating, and it was a pretty interesting take on a Halloween performance.
Yeah, I do think it was a Halloween performance and haunt adjacent.
Yeah, there you go. And then we had the Spook House in Poplarville, Mississippi.
Yeah.
Now, this was done by the local theater group.
Right.
And I went into this with a lot of curiosity, because as haunt owners, whenever you need anyone to work for your haunt,
right,
what do they tell you to do?
Find your theater group. Get the local theater groups. Yep.
Need an actor? Find your theater group. Need a makeup person? Find a theater group. Need a set designer? Find your theater group.
Right.
So what happens when a theater group puts on a haunt?
Yeah.
Actually, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It was not a traditional haunted house again.
Yeah, well, this is the closest to a traditional haunted house.
It is the closest, by far. I agree with that.
That we've been. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I really did. I enjoyed because the actors were more engaging.
Yes.
Than in a traditional
haunted house. It was very, very interactive.
Yeah, it was very interactive. You got directions from the actors on what to do. You got a choice of whether or not you could be touched at this haunt.
Yeah, they gave out glow wristbands.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, the wristbands kind of were not good. Mine nearly fell off.
Oh, you mean the wristband itself was cheaply made?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just.
They were the dollar store ones.
Yeah, that's not a big thing, though.
No, it's not, but I would have been sad if my wristband had fallen off halfway.
Okay, fair enough.
I would have been sad. But it was very interactive, and it was very unusual, because even though they had a small space, because the actors kind of controlled the rooms,
right,
and would let you leave on their time,
yeah,
it was still a 15-minute walkthrough.
Yeah.
Which, we went to a haunt to claim to be 86,000 square feet that didn't have a 15-minute walkthrough, so there's that.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, and I found it to be very engaging. I know I've said that word, but I really enjoyed the creativity and the sets.
And they had really good set design.
Yeah.
That's something we didn't really touch on. They had very, very good set design.
Yeah.
For a knockdown haunt,
yeah,
it was very, very well built.
I mean,
and very creative.
Yeah, and I mean, for this is the kind of attention to detail they did. Because everybody's seeing the door that doesn't open and they've got, you know, a secret way to go get out of the room. Well, their door had a frame and hinges.
And a light behind it.
And a light behind it.
Now, this also speaks back to the fire code issue, though.
Yeah, I did see where to go. I did spot what was going to happen. But, I mean, just the level of detail, because you wouldn't have been able to see the hinges without the light. You wouldn't have read it as a door frame without the trim around the outside.
Right.
I mean, it was that kind of level of detail that you can get from a set designer who works on plays year-round.
Yeah. They really did an amazing job with it. It was a lot of fun, and it was definitely the closest to a traditional haunted. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I have a quick question. Did you try the doorknob?
No, I was in the back of the line. I did not get to.
Okay, I did not either. I was wondering if it actually turned, because that just would have been like over the top.
Only.
I think Ellie may have.
Ellie may have, and I think Katie the plant did.
Yes.
Too. We had a plant in our group.
You forgot to do a spoiler.
Sorry. But yes, regardless, I think they did, but I did not.
Yeah.
But still, it was a very different experience. It didn't feel like it was a combination of free roam and like scene based at the same time.
Right, and it was very interesting. They did have some very creative and good scares. I love their marionette. She was just beautifully done.
Yes, that whole sequence was excellent, and there were a lot of excellent sequences in there.
Right.
And like I said, they turned what was a very, very small space into a much longer walkthrough by controlling the flow of the people.
Right. And we don't know what will happen if the flow, if they get a line.
Yeah.
to the flow.
And also, I don't want to say... Also, you said I didn't say spoiler, mm-hmm. but I don't think spoilers apply. Because I'm reasonably sure with this haunt, every walkthrough is different.
I'm pretty sure that that's true. Although that might be a fundamental scare thing.
I don't know. I did not see plants with other groups.
I don't know. Because I don't know who they would have been.
Fair enough. Okay, moving on.
They had multiple.
That's true. That is true. But it was indeed a very different and very unique experience. And I actually am really fond of it overall.
Yeah, and we've recommended it to some people and they're going to go check it out.
Yeah. And that brings us to the third of the artisanal haunts we visited this season. Mm-hmm. The Haunted Puddle, you heard right. It's PUDDLE. It was put on by an organization called Port New Orleans. They run like this artistic space off Port Street in the Bywater here in the city.
Right.
And, yeah.
I thought it was more Ninth Ward than Bywater, but...
I think it's Bywater. But anyways, okay. This is a interesting one. Either way, an interesting one.
Yeah.
It's...
It definitely straddles the line between theatrical versus... haunted attraction.
Yeah, I would describe this as less haunted attraction and more performance art.
Yeah.
I think is one way to think of it. I mean, okay, to be clear, it started out as a haunted house.
Yeah.
The first few sequences and rooms, I think, were very, very much a haunted attraction. Very detailed sets that I think would have fit in just about any haunted attraction in the region, including some of the really nice ones.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the costuming on those...
And the
characters
acting,
and the actors were really good.
The acting was solid. I those first few scenes could have fit in just about any haunt in the region.
Right. And, you know, going into what I meant earlier, whenever I said that a fundamental lack of understanding of haunt, like distract and startle.
Yeah.
The third room was an underwater room because it's the haunted puddle. So, of course, they're going to have a puddle somewhere.
Yeah, and to be clear, the... Puddle is, the story basically is a girl hits a haunted puddle while on a bike ride or something.
No, the witch person was supposed to put her there, and there were supposed to be two kids.
Well, regardless.
I don't know.
Someone fell into a haunted puddle and went to hell.
Yeah.
There you go.
Basically, you go through the puddle and you descend into different levels of hell.
There you go. Basically, that's the core of it.
Yeah. So you go into the puddle room, and it's a blue room, and it's got a mobile, and it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's spinning and it's got carcasses of dead animals on it, and there's a girl on a tricycle right underneath it inside of a wading pool, and she's spinning around too at about the same amount, same speed as
maybe a little
the mobile.
It's yeah. similar, yeah. I'm close
yeah,
enough.
And all she does is sit there and goes around and watches you. And as the path through the room goes between her and a bar, like a bar. Yes, where you can get drinks. So as you're walking through, it's such a compelling image that all you want to do is watch what she's going to do, because it's so eerie and beautiful.
Yeah, you're really curious as to what she's going to do. Is she going to jump up and scream at you? Is she going to pretend to fall off the bike? Is she going to run and have a panty? You know what? Where is this going?
Right. But the haunter in me is looking at that countertop of that bar thinking there's somebody on the other side of that and they're going to jump up and hit it.
Or go boo or do something.
Hopefully not boo.
But you know what I mean.
But yeah, I do. She is the distraction. She's a great distraction. For the startle that never happens.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this stems from the fact that the haunt wasn't really trying to go for fear a lot of the time. It wasn't trying to scare a lot.
Right. And I mean, she was definitely creepy. She got off of her bike, waded through the water, and walked out the door.
And led you into the actual puddle.
Yes, that you get to walk through.
Yeah, which is a few inches of water, basically.
Yeah.
Not sure how I feel about that. I know from a fire code point, once again.
Yeah.
There's issues. But, yeah, it's one of those things where they really, if they were going for scares, if they were going to make people afraid, missed opportunity right there.
Yeah.
If that's what they're trying to do, it's a blown opportunity. Now, this haunt did something that I've not seen in any other haunted attraction we've been to, and that was they used nudity.
Right. We have read about other attractions that do use nudity. We've never actually been to one.
Yes. This one had both male and female nudity.
Right. And it was not advertised.
No.
It was advertised as an adults only at some times.
Yeah, they're like half of the hours are kid friendly and half the hours are adult only, and you know, but that can mean anything.
Yeah,
on an attraction.
Yeah,
that can mean that they're more aggressive with the scares. They grab people. You know, there's no. This goes back to the content warning thing we've talked about a few times on this podcast. But here's the thing: I'm not like super offended by nudity.
Yeah.
I'm certainly never going to complain about attractive naked women.
Right.
But, you know, even like nude men don't bother me. The question in my brain is, how well is it used? What purpose does it serve?
Right.
And I don't get it in this case.
No, it distracted from a much bigger and better scare.
Yeah.
And it plays into phobias.
Yeah, and basically there was a bathroom sequence.
Right.
And there was a person covered in, like, hissing cockroaches.
Yeah.
And a guy from a tub burst out, and he's pretending to be covered in poop.
Yeah.
And he's naked. And so you see him, and he realizes he's naked. And in my case, my brain is like, okay, we're in a haunt with nudity. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
Let's adjust our thing. It's like when the GPS says, you know, rerouting.
Yeah.
My brain is rerouting a little bit here.
Right.
Not really shocked, not really offended, not really upset, but just noticing.
Yeah.
And adjusting. And I missed, apparently, him doing gross stuff with cockroaches.
Yeah, like having them come out of his mouth and, you know.
And that, to me, is the real scare in the room.
Yeah.
But here I am thinking about, you know, penis rather than cockroaches.
Yeah.
And I know which scares me more.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's an example of using the nudity actually to destroy a potentially interesting scare.
Right.
And there were nude female and male actors in the haunt.
Right.
Especially for the next couple of sequences. It was confined to one region of the haunt for the most part, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
But it didn't really seem to add anything or serve a strong purpose.
No.
It's memorable for that, but
yeah.
It doesn't really improve the haunt to me.
Right.
And so that plays into like this whole experimentation thing. I'm not against nudity being in a haunt as long as the haunt is advertised as adults only and it's clearly indicated what's going to be in there.
Yeah.
But the nudity has to serve a purpose for the haunt, and that's what I feel was failed here.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
So, yeah, we're going to have more on all three of these in an upcoming haunt review on GarbageHorror.com. But still, these were very interesting experiences. But in the end, I guess, even though I would not say I was blown away, I was most happy with the Scare House in Poplarville in terms of quality of haunt.
Yeah, we've recommended it, like I said.
Yeah. But I walked away thinking that none of them like were mind-blowingly the game-changing, either. They had interesting ideas, they did some cool things.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? But I did walk away feeling that these types of haunts are very important.
Yes.
Because they are a chance to explore and learn.
Right.
The craft of haunting is not going to move forward as long as we are confined exclusively by what we know is commercially viable.
Yeah.
As long as we just do what is safe, we're never going to move forward. So this is a place where they can take risks that the bigger haunts can't. They can try out new ideas, and they can experiment.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about experimenting is not all of the experiments are going to work.
Yeah.
Some are going to fail. Some are going to be bad, and that's okay because they are taking lower risks. They're not putting themselves out there.
And they may learn from their failures like many people do and come back with something more interesting next year.
And I do think some of the successful experiments will be picked up by larger haunts.
Yeah.
I do think this is, think of it kind of like the minor leagues in some way.
Yeah.
But not in like the negative sense of that word.
No, no.
I don't mean like, yeah, they're the minor leagues. No, I mean like, they're the place where people are trying things out.
Right.
People are, you know, doing new things. Maybe the better analogy is microbrews.
Yes.
That I like that one much better, actually. I apologize for the minor league analogy with its unfair connotations.
Yes, you should have read your notes.
I should have read my own show notes. But yes, microbrews versus macrobrews, I think, is the better analogy here. If a mainstream haunt is a macrobrew that has broad appeal and is mass audience,
right,
a microbrew is a place to try and experiment with these new formulas that just may fail. But you know what? It's okay.
Yes.
Just please be safe as you're doing it. Well, that's all I've got on this particular topic right now. Anything else you want to add?
Nope, that's it.
It's been a very, very interesting week checking out these and other haunts. But on that note, everyone, we are Haunt Weekly. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at Haunt Weekly. And until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 47, talking about artisanal haunts. We will be back next week with episode 48 on Halloween Day as we do the news and try to get caught up on all of the happenings that have taken place this season. We will see you guys next time.